Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Philippines. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to kick off some weekly coverage of Survivor South Africa with my great co-host, as always, Mike Bloom. Mike, thank you very much for joining me tonight.
Woo! Or I guess I should do a Josie impression of her on the fire.
Ooh.
Poor Josie. I was like, that's how I would blow on a fire. Like, I thought she was doing fine.
Well, she's a fan in the game, clearly. She was one of the only couple people to correctly deduce what the challenge would be. I think her mind, every time she got to that fire, was flashing back to OG Michael Scoopin in Survivor of the Australian Outback. Like, why blow too hard? We saw Tony, you know, get to pins and needles level. That's what happened with him before he fell face first into the fire, and the rest after that was history in more ways than one.
Yeah, Josie probably knows that the last thing she wants is to be associated with Mike Scoopin in, like, Survivor lore in any way, so she'll just do what she can to prevent that. And you know what? I'm okay with it. I think that she did fine, and no insulting Josie, who went through so much and now was taken out in this episode. So, so sad. So I'm just going to give her all the praise and commiseration because she went through a lot before finally getting her torch enough today.
Yeah, she went through 6 out of 8 tribal councils to get there, was technically voted off once before, worked her way up from a position on the bottom, and quite honestly, might have gotten screwed either by the lack of a merge or just by Mindanao either losing that last challenge or not having Luzon throw the challenge, depending on who you ask. But it was unfortunate. But what I will say, and I will echo, you know, what I said, I don't know if this was our last podcast or the one before, I really do feel like something that's great with Survivor South Africa Philippines is that even the episodes that have the more predictable or saddened boot outcomes are still really exciting episodes therein, because there's so much stuff going on that they pack in there in the remaining like 35 minutes. And even in the tribal council, there was some interesting talk. So I'm so excited to break it down with you. I am saddened as well that, you know, Josie joins yet another, just joins the line of big pre-merge character slash strategist to, you know, leave during this pre-merge portion. But I think that we're sizing up a really fun merge aspect, if we are to be believed that next week is finally the merge.
Yeah. And you know what? It was a bit of a slow episode this week as we start off our weekly coverage, but it's not just that it's so exciting, which it is, but I just enjoy spending 45 minutes with these characters. I like so many of them, or like I'm rooting against or for so many of them, that I'm truly invested. So I just love watching it every week. And yeah, heading into the merge, there's so many dynamics that we have to discuss. Yeah, I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, this episode also brought to light some of those people who might have been a little bit more in the background. Like, if you're looking at going into this episode out of our final 11, I would say the three people who probably had the least amount known about them were Vusi, Annalise, and Katinka. And now this episode was pretty big for all three of them. Mm-hmm. So I feel like now that we've approached the merge, it's one of those aspects where you say, OK, I know at least a little bit about everyone, which you take for granted sometimes with certain iterations of Survivor choose not to do that as they approach the merge for one reason or another. So I'm super thrilled to get to do this weekly coverage with you, just because I've been having so much fun this season and this episode is no different.
Yeah, and truly a testament to the casting department. And I feel like we say this every week, but when you look at how many great characters we still have left and then think about how many amazing characters, you know, Josie among them that we've lost, you know, Tevin, Martinez, Ace, these are some of the biggest characters and we still have so much quality left. It's just a testament to how great casting has been. I think it's honestly, again, hyperbolic me being so, so expressive about this season, but it's that good that it's been one of my favorite cast ever. I'll put it on the record. I'll say it.
Are you speaking logically or emotionally, Shannon?
Well, I'm a woman, so as you know, I must be speaking emotionally, of course. That's what women do.
PK!
I have some rants coming up. I love PK, but I've got some rants coming.
Yeah, well, and I would love to, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves since we're getting to literally the last few minutes of the episode, but I would love to sort of get your thoughts as to, I guess, gender dynamics and how inherent they might be in South African culture. I know you said it's been a while since you've been there, hence your spelling of Braai last week when we did our podcast.
Thanks for bringing that up, Mike.
Yeah, but just subtly throwing you under the bus there. But I mean, I do wonder, because it is a pretty inflammatory statement, but does it come out of a place of general ignorance or standards, or does it really come from, you know, should we really be saying like PK WTF?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I'm speaking about all of these dynamics in South Africa, where like I go back once every 2 years, but I guess I'll just speak for the whole country. No, but I can definitely speak more as my perspective, obviously, just like as a woman hearing that again from a character I really love and still love, but it was just a bit cringe. But yeah, no, actually, I should amend my answer that in strategy versus emotion, I think I'm going to go with gut.
Yes, thank you for going with the Kellen D none of the above answer.
Wasn't that just the same thing? Strategy versus emotion, heart versus head. This conversation is so played out.
Yeah. Well, she said it was a mixture of the two, though we dealt with some gut this episode, particularly with Chane. I think she was representing the gut really well.
Yeah. Well, actually, if we're going to get into the episode, I do kind of want to start with the end with Mindanao and with this decision and some of the things that were going on at Tribal Council. Tony's decision between Josie and with PK, did you ever think she might have gone the Josie route? Because I could honestly see some strategic benefit to either side.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like as soon as Nico does this aforementioned, you know, strategy versus emotion question, and Tony answers with, I think emotionally originally, and then the strategy takes over, I kind of thought then that that was going to be Josie's time to go. Because essentially that's what Tony is saying is, I really do feel like it was emotion versus strategy. She does have a close connection with PK, but I feel like, you know, she's tight with Josie. I think that's one reason why she sort of wanted to keep her in over someone like Tevin and make that big move last week. So I feel like when she said that initially, she was essentially telling them, hey, you know what? I really like Josie. In fact, you know, she was so guilted by it. She stood up and personally hugged Josie and apologized. But at the end of the day, strategy is going to prevail. And when it comes down to the fact that there's only going to be two of them possibly approaching this merge situation, and also knowing that they're going to have a lot of explaining to do about what happened with Mr. Tevin, which I think plays a little bit into their indignation that Luzon and their former Blues did not throw the challenge for them. This seems like the safer, more logical choice, even though PK, I agree with you that maybe when PK started talking about this vengeance plan, this Kill Bill-esque strategy of, okay, I'm angry that, you know, the other Mindanao members did not take pity on us, so I'm going to take revenge and take them all out. You could feel the wheels kind of turning in Tony's head of like, do I really want to be in bed with this guy who just hopped out of bed with his, you know, his respective mate a few days ago? Mm. I think that this was the safer choice overall, considering that she knows Josie, but I don't know how many, she doesn't know any other Luzon people. And so, you know, the devil you know in this case is better you know than the devil you don't.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the strategic upside to both moves, but I do agree that going with Josie is a bit riskier. I think with PK, he's relying on her. And while I don't think that he's her number one, I still think she's closer with Verna. She to him she's his number one. So I think that that's someone she can rely on and she can trust. In saying that, as you said, he just got rid of Tevin. I don't know how much anyone can trust him if he's willing to do that. But I do think that she can kind of keep him there as a number for her. With Josie, Josie brings in other numbers, but she might be on the bottom of that contingent. But when you're going into a merge with what is kind of like a voting block situation, to come in there with this really tight three, people who went to rocks for each other, even if you're going to be on the bottom of that, that would be quite strong. Going with PK, she's going more with the Mindanao thing, as much as they seem to not want to do that in their anger at the tribal council. But I think that he'll be a loyal ally for her. So I do see it either way. Mm. And I did love her self-assessment where she talks about how she is emotional at first and then logical, because I really do see that with Tony. And I was like, that is actually really spot on in assessing herself, because she does seem to like cry or lash out or be angry about things just like in the moment. But I do think that she makes logical decisions. And I think that PK, who said that he was logical because that's what men do, I would say that him taking out Tevin was emotional, you know, boredom. Yep. In a way, that's an emotion, because it's the frustration of it. It's like a gut, again, that gut instinct that he did that. Whereas Tony, I think it was the logical move for her. And you see that she was in this power position in this episode. So it worked for her. It definitely did. So for her, I think that she makes decisions in logic, and she was probably weighing up either logical outcome. I think she has personal relationships with both of them, so it was about which side she wanted to go with. But yeah, we need to talk about the fact that they thought that Luzon should have thrown the challenge for them, because this was so hilarious to me. And like, I understand that they're out there, they're tired, they're hungry. I can't even imagine what it's like, but this made no sense at all.
Yeah, so just to mention a brief point that you brought back there at Tribal Council, I loved Tony sort of calling PK out on his BS argument by being like, well, you just vented about this big, you know, Mindanao revenge plan, and PK's like, no, I had steps, I was gonna do it. And Tony just basically says, yeah, revenge is an emotion. You know, I feel like when people say the word emotion, they think of like, I don't know, I feel like despondent sadness or anger. you know? Yeah. Whereas there are so many, there's a whole movie from Pixar about how complicated emotions can be. And
there's
how many
at least
different
five
shades
of them.
There are. Exactly. There's at least five of them. PK's only talking about, you know, Lewis Black and, you know, poor Phyllis from The Office. None of the other characters whatsoever. And so I feel like he was sort of like putting her in a box by saying like, oh, yeah, you know, these are the only two emotions that can exist. And Tony says, no, my friend, you have emotions just like I do. And this episode was so interesting. I'm sure we'll get into more of it with the teacher Tony stuff, because I mean, I am still a sucker 18 years after the fact for the emotional elements of Survivor. That's why I was such a big fan of the Stephanie Johnson boot episode from Ghost Island, for instance, that it was an atypical way of storytelling. But I feel like it's rare nowadays when the game is so focused on strategy and people know the game so well that we get introspection into the way that people, you know, think about handling the game, because it is a freaking tough game to play.
Yeah.
And so your emotions are going to be on high. So I do really love, like you said before, Tony's point here about how when first things happen, when your tribe is on a losing streak, let's remember that Tony, and this maybe can segue into the, you know, the Tony and PK desperation, why didn't they throw the challenge for us talk? I mean, they came from the original Mindanao tribe, who lost a couple challenges, but were on a huge dominating winning streak, even through a challenge. Then, you know, Tony went to Luzon 2.0, who lost maybe only a couple of challenges. I don't think, quite honestly, she's used to losing.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things that just completely frustrates her. And especially if they feel like, okay, we're down in the numbers, we can talk about her, maybe not necessarily coming from a place of logic, but her statement that, oh, Luzon basically cheated their way through the reward challenge, you know, by Katinka nearly breaking her neck. So I think it's super fascinating to sort of watch Tony specifically work her way through the emotions that are associated with sort of being down and out in Survivor, and especially comparing that to someone like Josie, who even verbalized it in the episode. She's been down and out, you know, pretty much since Ace flipped on them, since you know, the 4-4 split, and she, you know, almost got taken out, if not for the savior of Ace. But she has sort of adopted the attitude of, okay, just be positive, you know, and that'll help you win the day. Tony hasn't necessarily taken that attitude. So I really like the comparing and contrasting of how, I mean, I think a lot of people were comparing this to Matt Singh from the Philippines, where it's very rare that we get like a 3-person tribal council pre-merge. But I always love seeing it because, yes, while it does leave only two of them on the other side, there is literally nowhere else to go. You are appealing directly. It's much like the final two decision back in the OG days of Survivor. You're making the appeal to one person in particular to help you. And I thought it was even though the result was sad, it was a fascinating tribal council because of that.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like this like weird triangle where they were only going to Tony, but if you're all going like one after each other, it becomes this like cool loop. But yeah, the Tony versus Josie thing is interesting because Josie has definitely seen more adversity than Tony in the game. I think she's seen more adversity than most people experience in this many days of Survivor. You know, getting on the wrong side of the numbers from episode one, being the target in a rock draw, getting voted out twice in a pre-merge. Like, she's been through a lot and Tony's been on the top. And that's a credit to her social game and the way that she was basically always in the majority. Again, a credit to her and how she's worked that, and also some luck. But, you know, for Josie, she's probably thinking like, okay, we lost a reward. Like, that is nothing to me. Like, I literally got voted out a couple of episodes ago. Whereas for Tony, she doesn't take it in stride as much. And I do think that while she definitely does come to a place of logic, and I agree with that, in Survivor, sometimes that's not enough. And when she's reacting with anger to challenge losses and reacting in that way emotionally, which she self-assesses as what she's doing, it still can affect you. Like, even if you're going to get to a place of logic, at that point, people are already annoyed about it. So she definitely does need to keep that in check. And while I do agree with the move that she made last episode, and I think what she did this episode was fine, just there was a lot of negative content from Tony this episode where, I don't know, it just wasn't a good look from her socially. And I think that, you know, that's something to watch going into the merge, because that could not be good. Even if she's making the right move, that's what you do beforehand, that could put people offside.
Yes, completely agree. We're going into a phase where now the people that you're voting out are going to hopefully vote for you to win the prize money. And it's less about the material and more about the intention.
Yeah.
I feel like when it comes to jury management, you could make the most salient move for yourself possible, but if you do it in a way that pushes someone away or does not have them realize exactly where you were coming from, that is going to spell danger for your game. And so, like you said, she eventually does come around with, you know, oh yeah, I, maybe I overreacted there, but if people take in your initial first impression, especially, again, she's approaching the merge with several people that she's never met before. Your Toms, your Shanae's, your Vusies, your Palesas. If they take Tony in, and especially considering that she was basically the one who single-handedly voted out Josie last time, you know, if they walk in and get a bad impression from her initially, that might earn their ire. And considering those are four votes on a presumptive jury, that is not great. Yeah. Not great. But I guess let's get back to the why didn't Luzon throw the challenge.
Why didn't Luzon throw the challenge? It would have made sense. No, I'm being sarcastic. This would have made no sense. Make no sense at all.
Yeah, because here's the thing, is that I feel like this is a great example of Tony and PK not necessarily realizing what their actions look like when you're not able to talk. I mean, they unfortunately didn't luck out in that. I feel like if they had someone sitting on the bench, like we saw with Chane and Annalise, which we can talk about, because I feel like that's just such fantastic editing to have them in there and essentially catch up. And we'll talk about if that has longer term ramifications. But, you know, if they had someone speaking for them instead of just saying actions speak louder than words, that would have definitely helped things. But if we take things from Luzon's perspective, yeah, you know, Werner is close with Tony, but you're looking across and you're saying, oh, they got rid of Tevin. Okay, I guess they're not going with the plan. They have their own little Red and Josie. You know what? No skin off my back if they lose, because then they can just get rid of Josie. Fine, yeah. We'll let them be. Let's soldier ahead.
Yeah, well, a lot of the gripes that they had, I think, would have been completely valid if they had voted out Josie last time and were left with Tevin this time. All the things that they were saying, like, we have to sacrifice Aminda now, it's like, no, you don't, because you have Josie right there. And also, they were the ones who say that they were the ones who struck the first blood by taking out Tevin last time. So, firstly, what are they supposed to think when they're the ones who have, like, cut the blue thing in half? By the way, they keep calling it blue and red, and I strongly feel that they don't actually know the tribe names. Someone on Twitter said that maybe they like calling it blue and red as like the OG tribes, whereas like the post-swap tribes are Mindanao and Luzon. And to that I say that it should have been Luzon as the OG tribe and Nuzon now. And it should have been Minda then and Mindanao. That's what we should have been calling them the whole time. And now we're hitting the merge.
Minda then.
Yes, okay, but now we've only come up with it right before the merge, so it's done, but that's what we should have been calling it. Anyway, where was I?
I'm all for puns, so I'm totally here for Minda then, though I think that will really confuse viewers, especially considering they have the tribe names on the buffs. They're like, wait a minute, did they change tribe names halfway through the pre-merge?
Blue and red. Like, what?
I mean, I'd rather have that than just have them repeat Minda now, like, 15 times. If we sub in Minda now for blue every time in this episode and you drank, you would be like... You'd be properly sauced. You'd be Chane by the water, just upchucking every meal that you had. I mean, this is, it's so interesting. And this has happened so recently in Survivor that, you know, despite, I'll call this like two quasi swaps, because the last one wasn't really a huge swap. But I mean, people are trying to, in vain, stick to these numbers from like the first week or so of the game, which is pretty crazy considering how much things have progressed. But yeah, I mean, they just need to think about how their move comes across on paper that Werner is eventually going to eat to everyone else. Because what they're saying essentially is like, yeah, you know, this blue strong thing? Nah, never mind. We're going to, you know, get rid of that for now. We have a friend now. They probably didn't realize that the three of them were so tight. I mean, it was a pretty depressing scene when they got back from the immunity challenge and the three of them sat around and they were all pretty pissed because it seemed like, you know, the Tevin vote really bonded the three of them. And they said, OK, and who knows what a Josie Tony PK alliance would have looked like come the merge. That could have been really exciting. But alas, it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to give some credit here for a second. I feel like part of the reason why this throw didn't happen was because of Annalise.
See, I don't think so, because the way that Werner knows, like, if he's looking across, and I think he's correctly assessing, that Tony has been with PK for the longest, and she's been with Josie for the longest, so she's going to be in the middle of that, which she was. And he's really worried about Josie, like, he's already voted her out. Even if she does have something going with Tony and PK, it doesn't really help him who hasn't made that connection. And he's really worried. He's like, wow, she's so good that he gives her a lot of the credit for Tevin going home. So I just don't think that Werner would want to save Josie in any way, especially when he's making his own connections with Annalise, on the other side, and obviously it has Jean and Katinka. You know, I think that obviously if they voted out Josie last time and Tevin was here, firstly, the tribe maker would be different. Who knows who would lose or win? But I think Verna would have wanted to throw a challenge because he would have seen PK and Tevin together and Tony is the third, and he would have done anything to save Tony, you know, get rid of Jean or even get rid of Annalise, because at that point he might not have had to reach across the aisle because they would still be Mindanao strong. So that's why he made that connection. So I think that if they'd done that, he might have thrown the challenge. But when he's looking across and he's looking like, who are we going to get rid of? You know, are they going to get rid of their red or our red? Which, by the way, I loved how they said that. They were like, why must we get rid of our red? Firstly, because you lost the challenge. Secondly, that is a hilarious, possessive way to talk about another human being right in front of them.
Especially right in front of them. Yeah, exactly. It's just like when John was, you know, as soon as the swap happened, she's like, okay, here's what's going to happen now. We're going to get rid of all these people. Oh, Annalise, you're basically like set dressing at this point. You know, it's so interesting how you talked last week about the destruction of the Mindanaos. And part of it might just be because they are completely counting out these Luzon people for some reason. They think they're like extras in this Survivor scene.
Yeah, I think that they look at it like they're still in a majority, because when you think about it, like just optically, it feels like Mindanao should be the majority because they were always like the more dominant tribe. But when they're talking about which red hostage to get rid of, Mindanao are in that current minority. So even though it's a ridiculous way to talk about another human being right in front of them. And it's also funny because you don't have the power to say that. Like you might be in trouble at the merge because, you know, you're Minda then are in the minority. See, Minda then, it's already working. I don't have to say OG Mindanao as much. So I just love that.
I like how you said it's
scene.
Already working because you used it once after you championed it as a term.
I'm going to use it like 10 times now to justify it. I hope you know that.
See, I said it. It's working.
I have validated myself. Just don't ask me to spell it. No more spelling on the podcast, please. I thought this was all so hilarious and obviously all driven by emotion. For them to break the Mindanao thing, the Mindathen thing, sorry, and then to complain when the challenge isn't thrown, for them to have any problem with it when they have a Luzon there that they can get rid of. So what is the problem? Like, I didn't understand, and it made no sense the way PK was talking about it, like, well, we're going to have to get rid of either me or Tony or Josie. It's like, yeah, just get rid of Josie. Like, that's probably what Verna is thinking. Like, that's probably why he didn't want to throw the challenge.
Yeah, well, I think that, again, this is them sort of saying, we're all best friends. Why doesn't anyone else see that we're best friends? You know, which, again, is a warped way of thinking about things because nobody's really looking across and trying to suss out the dynamics too much, with the exception of Verner. I just want to keep giving credit to Annalise because I thought she did a great job this episode. And I do wonder if I see your point about Verner sort of sussing out what the dynamics might have been on Mindanao now. I guess if we're going with version 3.0 of this tribe. But
that's so funny you say that. I'm sorry, because the South African thing is when like you want something to happen now, you say like now. So like it actually really works. It's like fully South African.
So Mindanao wanted Luzon to throw the challenge now.
Yeah,
and unfortunately they did not decide to do that. But I do feel like, and maybe this is just me falling into the edit of it all, but I do feel like Annalise is like, my blood is blue now. It's so blue, it's tainted, which I think is a fantastic line. Again, going back to like this blue versus red thing. I have to feel like that's at least some contributor, because I do feel like she has endeared herself to, you know, your Katinkas and your Johns, so that even if Verner does, and we can talk about their like quote unquote slight alliance later. But I feel like even if Verner is like, let's throw the challenge, she at least has put herself in a good enough place with Luzon in general that they believe to a certain extent that she is actually with them.
Yeah, I know. Annalise was amazing in this episode. And yeah, I want to talk a bit about her and Verna, who I was so impressed with in this episode, both of them. Annalise has such a good social game. We know because other players tell us, which is like the best way to credit someone's social game. You know, Katinka says she really likes John and has been with John from the beginning. She might be the only friend John has, actually. And even she is like, Annalise is my mother out here, and I would vote out Jean for her, and tells Verna that they would do as much. So the connections Annalise has made are really good. And just the way that it's worked out, she's been on a tribe with every single person in the game except Tony. And if you look at what everyone else has been with, you know, Versailles has been really separate. They haven't met anyone else in the game except Annalise. And, you know, obviously the same for the OG Mindanao, sorry, Mindathen. They haven't met Versailles. So there's a lot of segregation there. There's a lot of separation happening between every other member of the entire cast. And Annalise is the one who's squarely in the center. You know, she has relationships now with Verna. She has relationships with Katinka, obviously. And then she's got Sharnay and Tom, and through Sharnay, Vusi and Palessa. So she has so many options that she can go with. I think she's going to be a power player at the Merge. And I'm excited to see it because I just, yeah, I really like the game she's playing. And I like that she's finally got her feet under her, because her and Josie, they had these parallel experiences where they were both on the opposite side of the rock draw. They both got voted out. They were swapped. And for Josie, it ends here. But Annalise, it could be like the opposite trajectory. And like, where does she go after coming from this place?
Neither can live while the other survives. It's truly like a prophecy between the two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, to your point, what Annalise has right now is information, which is currency in the game of Survivor. Like you said, there are conglomerates of people that have not met each other. And so when you get to a Merge, she'll probably get people approaching her from all angles saying like, okay, what's the deal with this person? What's the deal with that person? Again, we can go back to that, you know, Chane and Annalise scene on the bench. But if you notice, at least from what we were being told, it was a lot of Chane talking to Annalise, not a lot of information going the other way around, which ideally is sort of what you want to do when you get the data dump. You know, you don't want to necessarily reciprocate. You want to keep your cards held close to you because Annalise has a lot of options right now. And yes, even though Verna and her are sort of tenuously eyeing each other, both of them sort of knowing that, hey, there's a chance that neither one of us are going to go with each other to the finals or anything like that, she at least has connections, which I feel like even if she doesn't necessarily take advantage of them, that's going to make her a key cog in this, you know, machine, because she's the one who essentially everyone else is resting on right now.
Yeah, and it's great from her because what we get to see, which we don't often get to see in Survivor, is the strategic part of a social game where it's like, okay, she's a great cook and we see that maybe saving her, and we see her kind of like, you know, saying great things to Verna and kind of boosting up his ego, and we can see that strategic part to it. And even here, you know, she's just basically like a good presence. I think people just want to be around her because she's really positive and she seems like a lovely person, basically. And we see the strategic upside to that. So I love that connection between the strategic and the social. And I think that she has a lot of that.
Yeah. To your point about the social game, it's so interesting. I feel like one key element of Survivor storytelling that still sort of needs to be mastered all these years later is how to portray a social game effectively in a game that's edited inherently strategically, just because it arguably is one of the most important elements of the game. You're spending 24 hours a day with a person. You want to sort of like them, you know, if you're spending so much time with them. But I mean, outside of scenes like, oh, this person braided my hair or this person did that, you sort of have to have these almost shoehorned in confessionals of people saying, I love this person, they seem like a mother to me, or, you know, this person's really nice, because that helps explain a lot of what really goes unexplained in the game of Survivor inherently.
Yeah, I mean, US Survivor seems to do it with just like big gestures, and that's a lot of what we get on US Survivor, which is quite rushed. So it's like, okay, Wendell brought Sebastian a shell. It's like this one big thing that happened. I don't know. I know that Survivor South Africa is just a few minutes more, but it feels way longer. I don't know why. I don't know how they're editing it, but that's just how it feels to me. And I do get that. I feel a sense of that social game. I mean, all the Tom stuff, all the way he's alienating, that's all been social, negative social, the opposite of what Annalise is doing. And I do think that I
see antisocial.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think that I see, yeah, that her game strategically and socially pretty clearly, just in the way that she's interacting with others. And even in the way that she has that conversation with Verna, and, you know, credit to both of them that it's like not too much pressure on it, but they do, you know, make that connection. And I think that, I mean, if they were to actually pursue that, they would be a formidable duo going forward.
Well, and it's so interesting as well, because this is the second person in this season so far who has had reverence for Annalise as a player. Remember that Martinez, for the reason why one of his main three reasons why he wanted to quit the game is because he felt that Annalise deserved it above him.
Yeah.
And now you have, and we can definitely talk about Werner now with him basically now making a twosome alliance with every member of Newzon. I think that, you know, he... Yeah, it's I'm co-opting it. So at least I'm the second person on the bandwagon here.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, we have now had multiple people say she's so friendly and I would almost sacrifice my game for her. And not to get too much into, like, you know, the ghost island of it all, or something. You could make the argument that some people were doing that just because they liked people so much. But it's something interesting to notice going forward. Annalise was not the biggest presence pre-merge, but I feel like she got enough good spikes. And when those spikes happen, we got some really key information about how she's playing the game that it sort of has all the characteristics she needs to really kill it in this game moving forward.
Yeah, I have high hopes for her because I think that she's got everything there. She's got the connection. She's got the ability. So I definitely could see really great things happening for her. And I also want to talk about Verna as well, who I was really impressed with in this episode. You know, every time I think about how close I was to making him my winner pick and just didn't because of that stupid piece of paper that he ate, I'm just like, damn it. Mm-hmm. He's doing so well.
I looked beyond what was on paper. And on paper in his mouth.
Read between the lines.
Who he was as a, yeah, and I decided maybe I did some stretching with him. This is him, working his position as a biokineticist, which he clarified after our first podcast that it's not really a medicinal, occupation. I believe it's something close to like a physical therapist. So I guess this one makes sense that he, you know, knows how to stretch. Though I thought I heard him say like, hey, let's go to the rounder, get into the water. We'll do some stretches and we'll say some scripture, which like, hey, listen, man, don't give away your hand too much. You don't want to, you've been putting up this pastor life for half the game at this point. Don't relent right now.
Yeah, but I do love that he tells us about how he's connecting those skills that he has as a pastor and how he uses that in the game. Like, that's so fun because I think that a lot of people would probably shy away from connecting that like religious element to like a duplicitous game. But he's like, no, these skills really do help me in what is a social game. And I love that he just like completely addresses that to the audience. But here's so many things to like about what Verna did in this episode. Firstly, I love the way that he reacts to Tevin going home. I love that whole thing. Like before,
what?
before they get to the challenge, they're like, oh yeah, Tevin and them will be good at this challenge. Like, they don't even think that it's possible that Tevin's gone. They have the huge reactions, but Verna is so on the ball. He's just constantly thinking that the second he knows Tevin is gone, he's like, okay, I have to pivot because now it's like the minute nothing is gone. That's why he approaches Annalise. Like, that's why he makes that connection. Like, he's constantly on the ball. And I'm thinking about it. He has two idols. He's going into a merge at final 10. And I'm like, I don't know when they'll get rid of him. Because to get rid of him, you're going to need one of two things. You're going to need to either blindside him with two idols. And to me, he's just way too savvy and just so aware that I don't see how they could do that. It would take a huge move, an incredible move to do that to someone who has two idols and who is a hell of a player. So that's tough. Otherwise,
now,
you need time.
Go ahead.
And I don't know, like, they do have time, like, they're down to 10. I don't know if it'll be, like, a final two. That is, you know, 8 votes, and I don't think it's like the US. I think there will be some rounds where there's no fire, there's no idols, maybe they can get him. You know, he is also a physical threat, so there will be shots to take. But they need to take those shots when they have them, and this is not a problem that they're going to have in a couple of weeks from now. Like, this is a problem for now. He has two idols. He has an alliance with every single person he's played the game with at this point. You know, Tony, PK, everyone who's on News On. So he's just got so many tricks up his sleeve where if they're like, they're talking about him being a shield. Like, no, he can't be a shield for you now. He's a threat right now. Now. He's a threat now. You have to start thinking about it pretty soon because with two idols and so many allies and not that many rounds left, you have to be thinking about it pretty quickly.
So on that note, what do you make of his vocalized play in this episode of my ideal situation is almost to Chris Doherty it and say, I'm going to go, you know, to the end with a bunch of women so then I can hopefully make a run at it. A, what's the chances of that happening? And B, could there be a bit of irony here where, to your point, there are not a lot of outs to actually get him out of the game considering his idols and everything, but do you foresee an opportunity where that does happen, but, you know, he loses immunity at a key moment and all the women look at each other and say, oh, what are we doing keeping Verna in the game? Let's get him out now.
I think it'll just be so hard for the women because, as we know, they can't think logically. They can only think emotionally. So it'll be really tough for them to come to that consensus decision. I'm sorry, I'll stop. Well, you know what? There's not a lot of men left in the game. So likelihood is he will go to the end with women because, you know, he's only played with one man still on the season in PK. And all the other allies that he has are women. So just by virtue of where he is in the game, he might have to go to the end with women.
Right. But do you think that, you know, it could be a thing where they get rid of all, you know, all these guys end up falling and they just look and they say, oh, you know, if Werner doesn't end up winning these challenges, they could say, oh, I mean, look at he's still left. We need to get rid of him or else we don't stand a chance at making our way to the end of the game. You know, it's something similar to like Australian Survivor 2017, where Lockie was able to extend his stay a couple rounds by winning immunity, but he definitely was looking like a big target because everyone was saying, okay, we got rid of these bigger threats for immunity. he's the only one left. Let's finish the job, you know, no half measures.
Yeah, I think that objectively, if you're looking at it, that's what they're going to say. But just look at the relationships that he has that may save them. And look at the fact that they're trying to use him as a shield. You know, John, he's probably John's number one in the game. He's Tony's number one. He's got a thing with Annalise. He said Katinka was his number one ally on News On. So he's, yeah. And you know, PK has had a thing with in the past. So he just has, it's not just that he has an alliance with everyone he's played with. It's like a really tight alliance where he's basically in everyone's like top one or two. Like, that is crazy to me. And, you know, it's a game built on relationships. So while you're, like, screaming at people, you know, take out Verna, how could you not? Such a massive threat. They might not be able to do it just because they have these connections to him that he's built, and it's a credit to him. And at that point, they might not see to take him out. And that's the beauty of Survivor, obviously. So if they can get him either with a bunch of time where they have to flush two idols and hope he doesn't win challenges and gets him at some point, you know, that would be interesting to watch because it will take them a really long time and it'll be pretty dicey. Or they're going to have to pull off what is basically the blind side of the century. And I don't know if it's possible to do that for him.
I mean, like, bigger blind sides have happened. You never know. Look at you, Mr. James Clement.
Yeah, but
I mean,
he's totally a much savvier player than James. That's the whole, like, that's why I think that they couldn't do it.
No, I'd agree with you, but I totally am in agreement with you here that I think Werner is looking fantastic going into the merge. I just wanted to play a little bit of devil's advocate. I want to finish with this. I mean, you said that he does have these several strong partnerships or trios with these people. Do you think there's a chance that they compare notes at all? This happens occasionally in Big Brother, for example, when they say, oh, he has a final two deal with me. He has a final two deal with you. Well, we can't let this happen. He's too duplicitous. Do you think there's a chance that that might happen? Or do you feel like Werner has been doing just such a good job at relationships management that nobody has the idea of deciding to talk with others about their respective relationships with him?
I mean, look, Tony already did tell PK about the idol, so there is a little bit of information getting out. There's a little bit of that conversation. But I do think that in this episode, seeing Katinka say to him that she would take out like a Jean over Annalise and also over Werner when she's been with Jean since the beginning from what we've seen in that all-girls alliance. So I do think that he's so tight with people that they might not talk. I guess it comes down to the player. I think someone like Tony might talk or might realize that, where someone like Jean maybe won't. It's a dicey game, but I guess he knows that if it were to come back to him, he does have two idols in his pocket, which is a crazy good spot. Mike, your winner pick is so good. That stupid Parchment. I rue the day that I didn't pick him as my winner pick.
Knock on wood. Yeah, hopefully that will bode well going into the individual game. But you bring up a good point about the idols in that, you know, having this guaranteed visage of safety, I think definitely allows you to play a bit riskier as well. And while you might say that him covering his bases is a bit of a safer choice, I feel like he is playing a bit more fast and loose with making such close connections, you know, which bodes well for a social game, but at the same time could come back to bite him. But he has definitely a few outs at this point. But can we talk about Katinka? Because, man, what a coming out episode for her.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I've always seen like there's a lot of potential there. As I said, you know, having watched some of her YouTube videos, she's a really fun person and just an interesting person. So I was interested to see more from her. She's basically at this point like a challenge beast. Like, Vusi can say what he wants, and he's done well too, but she usually doesn't have as much of a head start as Vusi, and she's still right in it. So she's absolutely a beast. She's now playing. She's completely relishing that she's underestimated. Like, this is another one of these characters who might have been quieter pre-merge because there was like Martinez and Tevin and all of these huge personalities. And now I think I'm like, we could see a lot from her in the merge.
Completely. It could totally be like a Christy situation from Australian Survivor 2016, where, I mean, Jean vocalizes it perfectly to Katinka. Being underestimated is the thing you want most in the game of Survivor, especially when you turn to the individual portion when people are saying, okay, who can I beat? Who can I not beat? And Katinka, I feel like, is just playing off reputation so well. You know, she's not coming off as like a complete dolt, but I feel like, you know, I believe she's the youngest person there. So I feel like she is definitely probably playing up the, you know, the age and this naivete that isn't necessarily there, because she's ready to make a move. Like you talked about, you know, she was been close with Jean since the beginning, to the point of where they said after Stacey Lee was voted out that Jean and Katinka were on the outs. Now she's ready to turn with Jean because she's made such close connections with Annalise. The comment that Werner made about how his closest alliance is with Katinka was interesting, because we didn't see any of that. So I wonder where that came from. If that just speaks to, again, Werner's fantastic relationship building, there's something else in there as well. But I feel like, let's say, for example, if you know, the Minda then start getting decimated, Katika is one of the last people they're going to go for, just because they could say, well, we'll get rid of this person, this person, this person, and then we can leave Katika for later. And that's a fantastic position to be in. That's like the Danny Boatwright position, because yeah. once you have room to play and faults to navigate your way through, that's when your game really opens up.
Yeah, for sure. And I have to say, poor Jean, I think they've spoken about getting rid of her in like every single episode since episode two. She's like barely gone to tribal council. She hasn't gone to any interesting tribal councils. One of them, someone quit. The other one wasn't a proper tribal council. Like, she's not really had to play so much of the game, but they speak about it every episode. Like, I feel very, very bad for her. But I also think that the way I see Katinka playing the game now, and also the connection she's made with Annalise, which seems like one of the tighter connections between Mindanao and Luzon, which could be obviously a huge thing in the merge, that also really validates to me Annalise taking Katinka, which I know people, you know, we talked about whether that was the right move last time we spoke. And again, pretty difficult when you're voted out unanimously for both Annalise and Josie to make that decision. But I think they both went with the person that they felt closest to, despite having been just voted out with that person along with the rest of the entire tribe. And I think that for both of them, like, we can look back, like, those were good decisions. You know, Tony got Josie through one more vote. And it seemed like she wanted to get her through more. In this one, it seemed like, you know, they were, she was considering it as well. So that was good for Josie and for Annalise and Katinka now to have that relationship, and something that probably would have saved Annalise, you know, if they had gone to tribal, even without Verna. You know, she has two votes there where Katinka's like, I'm not turning on Annalise. I think that it really does validate both of those decisions. Even though Josie's gone, I think, you know, a tick on both of those moves. And if people did criticize it, I think it was just because we didn't see so much of those relationships, especially between Katinka and Annalise before that swap. But now in hindsight, it was a pretty good decision.
Yeah, exactly. Hindsight being complete 2020. But I'm glad they sort of backfilled some information as to that relationship, because I do agree it can be, you know, it could be pretty deadly, considering that I feel like Annalise and Katinka, if we're going into this merge, they're two people that are probably near the bottom of everyone's hit list. And so this could be a pair, you know, if they maintain being secretive and work both sides, they can really do, you know, some big damage in this game. So, I mean, there's just so many exciting dynamics going into this episode. And again, I feel like this episode was a good coming out party for the two of them. I know that you said, Shannon, that, you know, Katinka was showing gleams of it before, but I feel like this episode really helped vocalize both of their strategies, which is good to know about approaching the merge, where things, I don't know, do you think that approaching the merge, and I know we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves, but do you think there's a chance that it'll just be like line in the sand, Luzon versus Mindanao? Or do you think that there is going to be like a voting blocks mentality where the red and blue intermingle and it's all purple from here on out?
Okay, firstly, I think you meant Minda then, but also...
Oh, yes, I'm so sorry.
No, yeah, it's so tough to see that it would just be original tribes with how much has gone down between each tribe, you know, from a rock draw to a complete split, all the problems that are going on with Tom, which we'll have to talk about with Visayas, and then, you know, Mindanao doing what they've done with Tevin. Yeah, it's so hard. It's so split. For me, it's total voting blocks, but it's interesting because it's just like groups that are connected by one member here and there. And I could see it going in any direction. I do think, and we are getting a bit ahead of ourselves now, but I could see like a consensus merge boot just because it's so messy. And then it's going to get really complicated with, you know, a duo here or three people here and some intermingling there. So I definitely don't think that it's just going to be like a binary thing where it's just original tribes versus each other.
Yeah, I think that, and maybe we'll get into this with Visayas, but I might make a bold prediction right now. I think that we're looking at Tom as our merge boot, maybe Vusi after him, but that after that, especially with Palesa having an idol, things get a little more complicated. And one more thing I want to say about Luzon is just, yes, Jean might be in the dark for the vast majority of this pre-merge, but she's such a good confessional giver.
I loved
her quote about Katinka saying, you know, when Katinka starts talking strategy to me, it warms my little cynical heart, which again just has great irony considering that Katinka then is the one to try to take out the one who has the little cynical heart.
She has so many good confessionals. She said, my boobs will stop me like it's going over a speed bump. Amazing analogy. Today I was talking about something with my boyfriend and I was talking about a speed bump. I was like, yeah, we've really hit a speed bump, much like Jean's boobs. And he was like, what did you just say? Sorry. This is what it's like to date me. It's not easy. Like, this is how I
talk. You have to be caught up on all major reality shows, international and local, in order to get all the references.
Refer to Jean's boobs just like in random conversation. Lucky he had seen the episode, so it did have some context, but still a very strange thing on my behalf, I have to say.
She's great. I, I she's, was
one of my favorite characters, yeah, for sure.
I can give my own perspective of it as well, of like my significant other not really understanding. I was rewatching the Tribal Council right before we recorded this, and my wife was overhearing, and when she heard Nico say PK, she said, "Is Beaker on this season? Did he say Beaker?" And I could just imagine now PK as Beaker from the Muppets, probably still as like flippant and emotional as Beaker, the less afraid and more, I don't know, flippant. But I just thought those, the South African accents, I think I get a little bit used to. Luckily, I think, at least I know you have sort of grown up around them, but I become more ingrained in them after a few episodes. But for someone who, to the naked ear, it might sound a little weird at first. So I was reminded of that, showing that to my wife this morning.
You and your wife should come to Australia, come over for dinner, spend some time around my parents, because this is just what it's like being around my parents. So I am used to it. The one thing I can do is the accents. I can't do the spelling, but I can do the accents.
That's all that counts.
Yeah. No, but it's really stressful watching Survivor South Africa, because I care so much about these contestants, where I'm like watching the challenge and it's like, okay, so either Versailles is going to go and Tom goes home, and I think that he is an incredible character. Again, I need to see him as a juror, so that would pain me. Or it's going to be Luzon, where Jean is in trouble and I love Jean. Or it's Josie. Like, who wants to be in that position? That's painful, but it's because they're all so good, like such good characters.
Yeah, I really don't hate anyone at this point. Like you said about Tom, and we can definitely use that to segue into Versailles a little bit. I think we are being told to hate him, but I kind of love him because of that, just because of how crazy of an emotional player he is and all the little random things. I specifically love Tom with Chane. I feel like their relationship has been a lot of fun to watch, albeit a little repetitive, because that's pretty much all that's happened on Versailles the past few episodes, because they keep winning challenges. But even him, I love his place as a character in the season. So it's really going to be killing our darlings as we approach this merch.
Yeah, and it has been for the last few weeks as well. So again, just a credit to the casting department. But yeah, let's talk a bit about Versailles. I don't have any fun nicknames for them because they're just one tribe. But yeah, there's a whole thing again is about Shanae complaining about the way Tom eats. And I love that, firstly, that every single thing she narrates, they then show us, like they show him doing that. That was fun.
Yes.
And I also love how they make it look like she feels sick and is throwing up because of Tom, when it's like also definitely because you just ate a bunch of chocolate on an empty stomach, like anyone would throw up. But the last thing I have about this is after 10 minutes of Shanae talking about how gross Tom was, she throws up. Then she puts her hands in the water that she threw up in. She didn't wait for the tide to take it. Like, she put them right in there and then washed her face. And that was way grosser than anything Tom did. Like, that really made me nauseous, ironically.
Such a hypocrite, that Chane. I think I saw the term thrown out of, like, health inspector Chane, which I love, just because she's the main one who's been like, I feel like Palesa and Vusi have said nothing about Tom's, you know, cleanliness, which, I don't know, how do you feel about that? Or we can talk about the storyline itself, but actually the place where Chane is coming from, because part of me is thinking that, yes, you want organization around the camp, and, you know, you only have so much personal cleanliness that you want to salvage it as much as possible, but at the same time, you're on Survivor, you know, you're out in the dirty outdoors. There's you before you, like, while you're chastising Tom for sticking his hand back, you know, into touching the brownie that you're going to have the next day, you probably have, like, sat and dealt with so many other microbes in so many other places while you're outdoors there. So I wonder if it's her trying to, like, assert control over one of the only things she has control over, which is, like, this is my brownie. I want to make sure that nobody with dirty hands touches it. But at the same time, look around you, Chane. You're not exactly in the most sterile environment overall.
Yeah, I think it's just trying to, like, hold on to what humanity you have in this, like, really disgusting situation that you're in. But, like, I also think it's just the manifestation of all of her emotions about Tom as a person and just being around him. And it just, like, comes out in this way where it's all about hygiene and stuff. But it's just that she just doesn't like Tom. You know, he yells at her. He's a brash personality. And then it comes out where he's licking his fingers and stuff. You know, I saw that other cast members were licking their fingers with the chocolate. Like, that's what you probably have to do with the chocolate fountain. But it's just the way that she feels about Tom specifically. And I have to say that a chocolate fountain is a very bad reward. Like, it is really messy.
Why?
I don't know. Like, firstly, I don't agree with any of these dessert rewards. I think that would just, again, make you feel so sick to the point where you throw up and then wash your hands in the throw up water and then put it on your face. But, like, that's just, it's not sustenance. Like, it would make you feel really sick. And the fact that it's a chocolate fountain, like, it's way too out in the open. Like, what if bugs get in there? Like, nah, it needs to be more contained.
Chocolate bugs. Listen, they cover, you know, they chocolate cover crickets in, you know, other countries.
And thus ends my love affair with chocolate.
I mean, I understand where you're coming from a logistical perspective, but considering these people have been A, probably starving for 3 weeks, and B, probably one of the things they're craving the most is chocolate. You gotta give them what they want, even if it's counterintuitive to their digestive system. I love the chocolate fountain. This might be the first chocolate fountain we've seen on Survivor. Yeah. It's a staple at like every bar and bat mitzvah in the tri-state area that I experienced in my youth. Too. So yeah, so like it just like it really hits home for me. I understand what you're saying with like getting stuff in there, but I just love the actual aspect of having just a big chocolate fountain, not a big one, but a chocolate fountain sitting in the middle of camp. Like it was some sort of like, I don't know, like semi-formal dinner party. I really loved it as a reward.
Yeah, I don't know. Were the people at your bar mitzvah like licking their fingers like Tom, or do 13-year-olds like have enough decorum to know not to do that?
Oh, God, no, 13-year-olds do not, especially 13-year-old boys. They do not think logically. They do not have enough decorum. They'll stick their hands, they'll stick their tongues in there.
Yeah.
If they don't care about their suits, they might stick their face in there.
Oh, yeah. My brother put the chocolate stuff all over his face in my bat mitzvah. I fully remember that. He's going to kill me for saying this on the podcast, but that was an embarrassing thing for him to do. I mean, he was 11, but like, I strongly remember him putting it on his face like war paint.
Did you light the candle with like him still with chocolate covered in his face while he ran up to help you?
No, I think my mom probably wouldn't have let that happen, but I just remember him like just running around hyped up on chocolate fountain, just like drunk off the chocolate fountain with the chocolate on his face. Like, it's crazy that this tribe wasn't doing that with, like, absolutely nothing else in their belly. You'd think that they'd get a little bit sugar high.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they just had a huge crash afterwards. One other thing I want to say about this. What is interesting from this perennial Chane thinks Tom is disgusting storyline, we don't get Tom's perspective into any of this. It's very much like a Shambo-Laura Moret situation where the rivalry is so one-sided. But I don't think Tom has any idea how much he's pissing Shanae off. Part of me kind of wants to see, even if it's just for like a comedic perspective of him being like, oh yeah, Shanae and I are great. Cut to Shanae being like, he's the most disgusting person I've ever met. But I do find it interesting that we don't know any of Tom's thoughts about maybe how he's coming across, or, you know, what he thinks of Shanae's like general reception towards him.
Yeah, I think he had said a couple of episodes ago that he was kind of seeing that Shanae wasn't as close to him, probably not because of things like this, but more just based on like actual arguments that they were having. But I wouldn't say, yeah, that Tom's the best at just like reading the room. So that wouldn't surprise me if he wouldn't think that she hates him this much. Like, that would be an all out war at this point. And he's so confrontational where I feel like if he knew how bad it was, like how she felt about him, that he would have a lot to say about it to her. Like, I don't think Tom can have the restraint to realize it, talk about it in confessional, but not actually have that confrontation with her.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Again, Tom is, remember, this is the guy who looked like he was going to throw Ace into a hole that Ace would dig for himself eventually to look for an idol after, you know, Ace flipped on him. So I think that if he found out that one of his closest allies was looking to jump ship, he would not be very happy. And perhaps we'll see that next week with Emerge.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Vusie for a second? Because he, very interesting depiction of Vusie this episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, he became like the challenge beast, or like, were you seeing it as like, well, you did have a bit of a head start on all of these things, but you know what? He did do well. Like, I am not going to take it away from him. I mean, he did well on the challenges.
Well, I thought it was interesting that in the previous season, they specifically said that Vusie had like sunk the winning basket, you know, despite, I think it was Katinka beating him and passing him on the basketball last time.
Yeah.
He ends up getting the two first place victories here with the snake puzzle, like the Ko-Ranga snake puzzle, and then with the ball, the Swiss cheese ball maze. But it makes me wonder, because Vusie is the one who's vocalizing like, hey, you know, now they know I'm good at puzzles, I might be considered like a bit of a challenge threat, which obviously I don't think harkens to the pre-merge. But I'm wondering, you know, again, I'm assuming that Tom's going to be a pretty consensus pick, but if they're looking towards those OG Luzons, I wonder if that's why they might go with Vusie above Palesa. A, because Palesa has an idol, and B, they say, oh yeah, Vusie does all these puzzles, like, let's get rid of him right now because he's going to be a much bigger challenge threat than someone like Palesa or Annalise.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good way for the show to explain it to us in the time that they have, whereas like, I do think Palesa just can make better relationships and connections, but as we've said, it's hard to show that as much. So just like something that's really cut and dry, he's really good at challenges, and I'm sure that would play into it if they decide to get rid of him being a threat. So I think that that would be a good way to explain it to us, but I do think that he is protected to an extent by Palessa and Sharnay and now Annalie. So I think he might have a way to go. Maybe it's setting up some future challenge run or something like that.
Yeah, that could be interesting as well if he goes in a challenge run and then that sort of sets him up too. Because I do not see, maybe it's because Vusi's a little bit of like a Johnny come lately, but I don't personally see him going that far. But who knows? Again, maybe this devolves into a larger question. I mean, again, I haven't seen any iterations of Survivor South Africa before this, but do you think they're going with a traditional winner's edit? Because again, you look at something like the aforementioned Australian Survivor 2016, where not to say that Christy was like a complete out of nowhere win. I think if you look back, she did have some sort of involvement in each episode in some way. But I feel like if you went with the more conventional winner picks, you would have had like your Lees, your Flicks, your Brooks, even like your Connors or your Kates, and Christy would be far down on the list. Do you think that now that we're approaching the most significant portion of the game in the merge, that Survivor South Africa this season specifically will hew closer to like an Americanized winner's edit?
Well, the thing with the American winner edits lately is that there tends to be a really big disparity in how many confessionals people get, and the people who are, you know, actual contenders at the top and the eventual winner will get a lot of confessionals. And then there's a lot of people who are basically just like cut out. You know, in Ghost Island, when we got to the merge, half the people, just based on how much content they received, couldn't have won. And whereas this time, I think that just based on how much content people have received, I would say Vusi is the only one you could probably rule out from an edit perspective. Tom, you could probably rule out as well, just based on A, who he is, and B, the type of edit he's received. Even though it's been a big edit, it's been very negative. But everyone else, it's like, it's so tight at the top. And I think the confessionals are way closer together. So yes, if it's going for, you know, conventional edit, well, it's edited very differently in that there's way more options for a winner because we know so much about every single character, except maybe Vusi.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I saw in the conversation about this episode on the Rob Has a Podcast Patreon group, people were talking about like you mentioned before with Tony's more teacher Tony moments this episode. They're saying, oh, yeah, Tony's winner edit just sort of like went out the window now. But I don't know if I want to counter out just because I don't know what sort of way they're going to tell the winner story. You know, I think I saw something on always one of my favorite sources, the Survivor South Africa Reddit, where I think they said something along the lines of like, they're not doing a winner's edit, but they're editing to show what's happening in the moment, which is a weird way to describe it. But I see where they're coming from, where maybe they're not necessarily building out like a huge whole season arc of this is how it happens. We talked about how they've been able to build out more long term arcs over a series of episodes, but I think they're focusing a lot on what's currently going on with the dynamics and really, like you said, highlighting a bunch of different people's thoughts on things rather than saying, okay, we're really going to be invested in these two or three people because that's who's going to go far. And so you're going to have a lot of emotional investment in them come the finale.
Yeah, I think that when they show stuff, you know, in any iteration of Survivor, it can be because it ends up being really relevant and also because maybe what will happen will back it up and that person does do really well or they win. So we need to see that content from them. Or if they get negative content, it's that they don't do well or that they lose for that reason. Or it could just be because it's compelling and seeing Tony's reaction to that and that whole dynamic was the most, you know, interesting thing happening at Mindanao at that time. So they're going to show it without it having to like dictate how she'll do in the game. So yeah, I wouldn't really, she's also had like a lot of positive content and a lot of the stuff last week as well. So I wouldn't really rule anyone out. Obviously there are people who have had bigger edits, more positive edits. Verna and Palessa are probably at the top of that. But Tevin had some of, you know, he had some of the most confessionals of everyone in the cast. His was pretty positive as well. I mean, it was getting a little bit arrogant, but yeah, it was positive. And then he went pre-merge. So I don't know. I don't think I can predict what the editors are doing as much as I think I can for the US. I'm not always right with the US either. But yeah, just the fact that I've been so shocked with things like Tevin as well. I'm like, you know what? I'm probably going to be wrong about this too. So I'm just not going to make like any bets about this.
Yeah, just strap yourself in and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, some of this other challenge stuff that was really fun. You know, you mentioned the Sharnay and Annalise thing. That was great. Why don't we see that in US Survivor? Like, is that something that's happening in US Survivor? Because are they, would Jeff pull it out? Are they not allowed to do it? I love seeing this.
No, they're able to, I think, because from what I recall, I mean, my memory's a bit hazy, so people can correct me. But I believe most recently as like Survivor Triple H, I remember hearing something where like Chrissy and Lauren were sitting at a challenge. And I believe on the bench, that's when they were sort of talking about like what was going on. And maybe that's when they sort of helped hammer home the like cross tribal heroes hustlers alliance that happened come merge time. So I do feel like it happens and it's allowed because I feel like it's part of the game. And maybe that deals with like strategically, you know, sitting people out, how that might determine like, you know, off challenge conversation, because it's great that you know, we have these two close allies in Annalise and Chane talking with each other. Chane totally throwing Tom under the bus and saying, no, don't worry, we can trust Palesa and Vusi. I don't know how much Annalise is going to take her up on that. But again, it was super interesting to, again, I can't speak highly enough about the editing on this show, to have the challenge and this final heart-wrenching portion of, you know, constantly going back and forth with putting these balls through these holes at the top of the maze, but then cutting to Annalise and Chane sitting on the bench just sort of gossiping about everyone else in the game.
Firstly, Survivor South Africa is way too crazy to catch someone else up in a challenge. It's like, okay, so we hate Tom now, and Palesa found an idol at Tribal Council. Like, there's so much. Imagine if Annalise had to give it back. Like, we went to Tribal Council, no one got voted out, Martinez quit. Like, there's so much information.
Or like a game of telephone of like, guys, you won't believe what Annalise told me. She went to Tribal Council. Jean tried to quit. And then Martinez tripped. Maybe that was it. I'm not entirely sure. I'm very hungry at this point.
Yeah, no, I love the relationship between Chane and Annalise. And I think they're a really, really tight pair. And I'm excited to see them back together at the Merge. Just like that whole dynamic I really enjoy. The challenge itself was like really intense. When we see this in US Survivor in that whole ball part of the challenge, you know, multiple people can step up to the plate to try and do it. But in this one, it was just like down to PK, Katinka and Vusi. And like, it was, you know, especially in slow motion, it was really intense.
Especially in slow motion.
And the reactions in slow motion were amazing as well.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I broke people on this show by saying that they use slow-mo way too often. I did see at least one person be like, now that's all I can think of.
It was amazing. And just like the way that PK was like watching it like a horror movie, like watching his own ball, like, no, like, don't go in there, was amazing.
Yeah, I loved him. Yeah, I loved him doing his own commentary. Like, you can do this. Come on. And Nico sort of calling it out, I think, was fun. And also to cut to the reactions of like Josie and Tony are like leaning over on that post, either because they're exhausted from the challenge or because they're like, they have so much emotional stakes at this point that it must have been just so nerve wracking to watch it rest solely in the two hands of this wild card that is PK.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. And, you know, it, again, we don't know what would have happened if, like, Tevin was there. And it would be hard for Verna to throw a challenge like that when Katinka's on and she's a challenge beast and she was the one who took that. But just watching them all really have to step up to the plate and be the hero, I'm like, this is so unfair. In the U.S., you know, you allow other people to change it out, but it was really just on these three people. That is tough.
Well, I wonder if it's also because there's so few people there. Like, you know, we saw, I believe, in Survivor Palau, there was that infamous puzzle where it was Bobby, John, Stephanie, and Ibrahim, I think, doing that water slide puzzle. And I think that Bobby, John was initially the caller and Stephanie calls an audible and switches them out and they still lose. But I wonder if there are such small numbers that production's like, no, you need to make a choice and stick with it.
Yeah, that is probably it. But yeah, it just seemed really, really tough. Okay, I also had a Nico nugget, which, you know, I just had one because he's too good. But he says to Mindanao, he says, you know, someone has to go home at every tribal council. I'm like, you literally just had like a non-elimination tribal council.
Yes, I had the exact same note down. I thought that was fantastic. My other Nico nugget I had was, I think it was either Jean or Katinka was giving back the little of the two idols and said, like, take good care of our baby. And they were like cradling it. And Nico just grabs it and walks off with it. Like, he is not buying into the imagination of Luzon whatsoever. So those are small Nico nuggets.
Or he's a terrible babysitter.
Yeah, either that or I don't know. I don't want to, you know, impugn too much of Nico's parenting skills. By the way, did you see that one Survivor US alum is particularly thirsty for the Nico?
Yeah, I did see this. Firstly, she thought that he was Australian. It's like, she has, you know, again, it was Jerry Manthe to make sense of this. So it's like, you've been in Australia. Like, you know that this is not, he's not Australian if you've heard his accent. But she did tweet to Jean, I think, just like hitting on Nico, which is a very weird way to do that. And then Nico kind of like came back, like talking about his marriage and stuff. It got a bit awkward on Twitter.
Well, Jerry should have watched this episode. Maybe she was inspired by all the chocolate stuff that she's like, oh, it doesn't even matter that you're not Australian. I'm coming after you. I'm going to pour chocolate. I'm going to dip you in the chocolate fountain, Nico, and lick you off and then put you back in again. Screw you, Chane.
How did we get here? No, but speaking of people hitting on other people on Twitter, I did see that Tevin said he was very excited. I think he used the love eye emoji for sitting next to Josie at the reunion, but not as excited for having to sit next to Martinez.
Yeah, I would say like that's a fun sandwich, but it's like a sandwich where like one piece of bread is really good and the other one just comes from a completely different loaf and like is a little moldy and tastes a little odd. So it's an odd sandwich. But yeah, I guess Tozy, they're really trying to make it a thing. I guess this was a hell of a pre-jury trip, though, all things considered.
Yeah, again, such a good cast. But like, did they actually go on a pre-jury trip? Because then Tevin and Josie could actually happen, and I'm totally shipping it. But I think they probably just went straight home like all other international versions, which is such a waste, because I think Tozy could have been a thing.
Maybe production was like, we're going to send the two of you off. They're like, oh, let's go on the big pre-jury trip. And it turns out to just be the two of them. And they decide to, maybe they'll be like a secret scene. Like instead of doing Ponderosa, they'll do like the adventures of Tozy navigating, you know, I don't know, like Fiji or something like that.
I would watch that, but Martinez would have to be there too.
Martinez would have to be a narrator. Like he could be the host of it. Like he'll bring them together and they'll just be constant arguments every time. He cannot be objective. And that's, I guess, the best part of it.
Oh my God, for sure. But let's talk a little bit about next time, because we're going to talk a little bit about the next time on. Some people, you know, don't like that. So if you don't want to hear any of that, even though we've spoken quite a bit about it until now, you should probably skip ahead. But I spent a lot of time flipping my laptop upside down, you know, putting my face up real close to it to see what it said. And I did get it. And then people put on Twitter, like they just flipped it around so you could read it. I'm like, oh, well, that was a waste of time. But basically,
well, let's not spoil your efforts here. Can you read to me word for word what the note says that Tony and PK were reading next time?
I can. And I can also promise that I did this before I looked at Twitter. OK, no, it says, and I quote, a new day has dawned. A new phase begins. Clear out your camp. Pack up your things. Give it all you've got. You are on the verge with a 1 in 10 shot. Welcome to merge. So that was great. And you know what? I did think when we saw the next time on and it was just clearly like the one scene before they would clearly merge that we would probably merge anyway. But yeah, so officially we're getting to a merge and I think it's going to be crazy. Maybe we should do a little bit of a take on what we think is going to happen.
Yeah. So first I want to say that it is interesting in the next time on that they didn't show that a merge was happening. I guess they want to keep an air of mystery, but really there's only two people. They're not going to do a Palau and be like, wouldn't this be interesting if only one person from this tribe made it to the merge? And there's, you know, there's already 10 people left. And I feel like in both this past season of American Survivor and Survivor New Zealand, they're like, welcome to the merge. Cause they really want to hype up that it's a new phase of the game. The stakes really get raised. But if we're talking about what we think is going to happen, I sort of planted my flag a little bit earlier on the podcast, but I'll repeat it here. I feel like Tom is going to be a consensus first boot, because I feel like even those who would want to be stumping for him, aka, you know, the old Luzons, are not really stumping for him. I feel like his closest ally in Chane wants the least to do with him. And so she might be the one who, you know, might help sort of start that kindling and start that fire to eventually get Tom out. So I feel like Tom is going to be an easy first boot. I personally feel like Vusi might go next because they're going to say, okay, like Mindanao is going to say, all right, we'll keep this tenuous relationship for now. Maybe they'll keep like Annalise strung along and they're going to say, okay, let's go for Vusi next. That's when things get a little more complicated. I do agree that I feel like Werner is going to be in a good position. This is where I could see somebody like John maybe going early on in the merge, because if we're talking about relationship building, she really hasn't built relationships with anyone. She's built it like sort of with, you know, Annalise and, you know, with Werner. But other than that, like, it doesn't really seem like anyone specifically wants to work with her. So it could be one of these situations where she just sort of gets left out. But what I'm hoping for is after a couple of easy votes, things get shaken up a bit more. We end up with these sort of conglomerates and with three idols in play. And I'm assuming more to come, depending on what gets played. I think we're in for a very shaky, very fun merch.
Yeah, I do think that with Tom, for people like Palesa and Vusi and Shanae, who, as we know, don't feel great about Tom, but they haven't met five people that they're about to play the game with. And I do think it's a little bit of it, like, is the devil you know better? Because if they just allow Tom to become that consensus merge pick, then, you know, then they're left in a minority against five people that they didn't know 3 days ago. And so for really, really savvy players like Shanae, like Palesa, they might not want that. They might not want to be in a minority with people that they don't know enough about. And I think that they might try to save Tom from that perspective. I do think that Tom is probably the one you'd look at as like, okay, he'd be a consensus merge boot. If from the Mindanao side, probably Jean is the one who might be a consensus merge boot. And I do kind of wonder if there's going to be a little bit of that, like, okay, we'll get rid of you know, that consensus or that one, or fighting over those two people at the bottom just based on getting those numbers. It kind of does remind me of something like in Game Changers, where Haley and Michaela were on the bottom. They could have been a consensus merge boot either way. And Ceree's the one who takes it and says, okay, well, I want that consensus merge pick to go because Michaela could be a number for me. And she keeps that to her advantage. And I do wonder if someone like Pelessa could take Tom, who obviously she doesn't have a positive relationship with, like Ceree and Michaela had a really positive relationship, but she might just want to keep that number and be like, okay, well, no one cares about Jean, let's go for Jean instead. So I do think that there might have to be some elevated strategy there, because Luzon could be picked off if they allow someone that they don't like but have played the game with to go first.
Yeah, or it could be a situation where, I don't know, because maybe they also feel like Tom is such an unlikable liability that they lose the chance of even bringing over another person. You know, maybe even though they feel like, okay, we're at 5-5 right now and we can maintain this sort of tenuous majority, they can feel like, well, these other people are deterred from, you know, being with us because they don't want to be with someone like Tom. And those are people that, you know, you look at someone like Annalise, who has gotten in very tight with several Mindanao members. I don't know if she wants to sever those ties just yet. So I feel like it could be more complicated. And what you said about, like, Pelessa keeping Tom, I actually feel like it's a much more likely situation that Werner does that with Jean. That Werner says, you know what, I want to keep Jean along. We're working together, even if we don't really want to take each other to the end. So, you know, I'll put my neck on the line. I wonder if it could be a situation with something like Survivor South Pacific, where if there are these two sides that they say, okay, who's Pelessa playing her idol on? Who's Werner playing one of his idols on? Let's vote for, like, the least likely person for them to play their idols on. And that's how they get these other situations going on. So I think it could be an interesting, you know, way that things shake out, even though it might be more of a straightforward vote, you know, in this first merge vote, despite there being such a chaotic pre-merge before it.
Yeah, I mean, then going in 5-5 in those OG numbers, and I just don't think that they would be really split so much to the point where people wouldn't flip. Like, are they really going to go to, like, again, rocks? Or is Pelessa going to play her idol on someone like a Tom or even an Annalise who's, you know, she was on the other side from her and has, you know, while she has a relationship with Sharnay, she hasn't played with Annalise since then. So I don't know if they'll be so tight as to just be like 5 versus 5. I just think, like, where is Pelessa going to go if Tom does go and she's left with Vusi, Sharnay, Annalise, who, again, hasn't had that relationship with her, literally try to vote her out and cause a rock draw and, you know, get numbers against her, and then 5 people that she hasn't met. I think that maybe it's best to just keep numbers in the game that at least you know and can predict and you know exactly what Tom is going to do.
Well, I wonder if Pelessa sort of has, like, a game respects game mentality. So I wonder if she can try to, and Werner seems to have one of those as well, hence the slight alliance with Annalise. Maybe this is me drawing out a bunch of fan fiction in my head, but I could see a situation where maybe Pelessa approaches somebody like Werner and says, look, between us, we have 3 idols. We can control this game, the two of us, if we decide to put our powers together. Whether or not Werner takes her up on that offer, I'm not entirely sure, but I could see in some sort of universe her making that pitch to him when the chips are down.
Yeah, I mean, having never seen them interact, I don't know how that would go, but, like, I do love the fan fiction of that happening, just because, like, it's too, like, it's like 2 superheroes teaming up. Like, it's like Batman and Superman just teaming up with all their idols and just, like, winning the whole game.
Yeah, so definitely hopefully better, you know, Justice League than the actual Justice League movie.
Oh, for sure.
but this is the
Survivor
fun
South
thing,
Africa
though,
is Marvel all the way, no DC here.
Oh, no, yeah. There's so much fun going on, so much intrigue. But, yeah, the fun thing about this is that, you know, you do have these larger players like Werner and Pelessa who have idols. But you, again, have a lot of these more under-the-radar players like Annalise and Katinka, who I do think, I see your point about how it's tough it is to get Werner out, but I could see situations where they might be able to, like, pull a maneuver out from these power players just by relying on these relationships that they have built so strongly. And by being counted out by those power players as well, by essentially being kept around to be like, oh, yeah, they're definitely a vote in my pocket. Sort of like what Tevin was doing with PK. And PK is another element here as well, where, you know, you have him and Tony, who I'm assuming they're going to want to go back to Mindanao, especially Tony with Werner. But PK has this burn them all policy that I feel like he's, even though he said, like, oh, how stupid does she think I am that I would actually want to do that, I still think he has that idea at heart, and so he might want to pursue that. He might be the most likely to jump tribal lines without giving some sort of, like, superlative to him come merge time.
Yeah, I also love with that, like, PK's best argument for Tony to keep him should have been, like, we'll be Mindanao strong, but instead he was like, we're going to take out all of Mindanao's, like, against Josie. He was like, why was that the argument that you would make? So ridiculous, but...
Well, He's trying to prey. He's trying to prey on her emotions. Like he said, he feels like, unfortunately, due to her gender, he thinks that she thinks more emotionally. So he's like, "We'll get them all. You know, we'll do it for Josie," basically, which he'll say while Josie's, of course, in the room while it happened.
Yeah, I don't think he actually thinks that. I just think that he said something really silly in the moment. I think he knows that it's not so binary. I like to think so because I do love PK. I loved him watching the challenge like a horror show. And I just think he said something really silly in the moment. And it was on national TV, so I feel bad for him in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting, to see him come in because he has been, if we're talking about like late bloomers here, he is definitely one as well. But we've seen some content from him, but he was the one to stab his best friend in the back. It maybe one of the most interesting things to watch next episode is how he's going to explain that to the rest of his former tribe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how he's going to try to justify that, because if we're talking about people who might not be at the bottom now, maybe he's a consensus pick for the Mindanaos. You know, maybe they say we can't trust PK. Plus, he might be a threat in challenges. Maybe we should take him out now and keep Jean.
Yeah, it's like, who else does he have really except for Tony? He hasn't really ever seemed particularly close to Katinka that we've seen. I mean, he did think that it wouldn't be great. You know, people would care if she died. But besides that, we haven't seen a ton of it. He was aligned with Verna, so he could have something there. But yeah, I feel like he doesn't have as many options and as many as relationships, also because of the people he's had to play with and just because of maybe the relationships that he's made. We can actually go in here into a couple of questions that do pertain to this. We got a question from the great Rob Sestanino, actually, who was asking questions on our podcast, which is kind of crazy. He says, in hindsight, doesn't getting rid of Tevin look like a really bad move for PK? And I would say, yeah, it does. For that reason.
Unquestionably, yeah. Yeah, we just talked about this a bunch earlier on in the podcast about the intentions and the way you come across with your actions. And what I think PK essentially just told Werner and the other former Mindanaos with showing that Tevin got voted off is like, hey, listen, if whether you're a red or a blue, if you're not here for my game, I'm voting you out. And in a game that's about loyalty, even though you're approaching the individual phase, that does not play well necessarily. So again, he might be able to save himself. I don't know what the pitch he's going to make next episode is when everyone joins up together, but it's going to be an uphill battle, especially compared to someone like Tony, who, as we talked about last week, we could say that Tony just said, you know, she could very easily make the argument of, hey, you know, I heard Tevin was going to target me and I, you know, sniffed out that he might be a little more duplicitous against our original tribe alliance. PK doesn't necessarily have that, considering he was the one who outed that information, you know, and he's also come across as a bit of a loose-lipped person between that. And he was the one who, when we talked about the much maligned Operation Discipline, he was the one who went to Tevin and basically exposed his relationship with Martinez, how it wasn't as strong as Martinez maybe thought. So I don't know. PK might not be looking in the best position to go far, in this game right now. He could still make some more moves. Again, he is a huge chaotic element in the game at this point, but ain't looking good at the moment.
Yeah, and also just like thinking about the real short term of what he did last week to this week. Like, firstly, I said that if they kept Tevin, I don't think they would have gone back to Tribal, just maybe based on them winning the challenge or Werner throwing the challenge. But if they had gone back to Tribal, he would have been in that center choosing between PK and Tony. I mean, sorry, between Tevin and Tony. And that would have been, you know, his decision to make. And he would have been that swing vote. Now he puts himself at Tony's mercy in this vote, where I don't know how much of a swing vote she really was or if that was not really genuine. But, you know, I did see the strategic benefit in both moves. So he put himself at her mercy there, where she could have gone with Josie and gone for that new voting block and taken him out. So just for the fact that he would have had so much power at this vote or not gone to Tribal Council at all, he like really might have been in some trouble here as well.
Do you think if it had come down to him, Tevin and Tony going to Tribal Council, do you think he would have voted off Tevin then?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I'm like, wow, it would have been kind of sad if it was like such a big move last week and then it just would have happened this week. I do think that, you know, I guess if he was going to do it last week, then he may as well. I just don't think that they would have gone back to Tribal. So I just kind of feel like it's a moot point. Like, there's no way that Werner's allowing Tony, surely, to go to Tribal Council as that clear third when he can do something there to get rid of an Annalise or a Jean or anyone over Tony.
Yeah, and I wonder if we talked last week about how we felt that the Tevin boot, while magnificent, was definitely too early. It's interesting, though, if we think about, you know, was it a foregone conclusion almost? You know, was PK going to make this move no matter what? And the problem is just always going to be doing this pre-merge and not necessarily whether you're at four or you're at three in your tribe.
Yeah, I think that actually what's interesting is that their move, not just to take out Tevin, but to keep Josie, was to show Red or Luzon that they can work across the aisle and they can have that relationship. And they really did want to show people like Pless and Vusi, like, hey, we saved Josie. We're willing to work with you. And now, just based on the position that they were put in, they do have to go to Emerge and be like, well, that's actually done. We've saved Josie for one vote, but we did vote her out eventually. So it's just kind of like not really relevant anymore.
Yeah, they could say, look, there were only three of us, plus Luzon was supposed to throw the challenge. They didn't throw the challenge.
Was not our
Blame
fault.
Them, not us.
Yeah. Guys, you have to take responsibility. That's what Nico said. And I was like, you know what? He's right. Got to take responsibility.
Yeah. Someone goes home at every tribal council. You have to take ultimate responsibility.
Yeah. John Johnson asked, can PK and Tony be the South African version of Malcolm and Denise? And personally, I don't see that tight a bond. Like, things are already a little bit contentious between them. And I just think that Malcolm and Denise, they came out so strong. And I don't see it being as tight between Tony and PK.
Well, I think they're also approaching a situation where, I mean, you could compare, like, the, not necessarily the dynamics between them, but maybe John speaking more about the macro construction where, you know, they approached the Philippines merge. They were down, what, 2-6 to 3 at that point. And so, you know, they were key cogs and, you know, being able to like work back and forth, you know, they helped get rid of RC and then they got left out of the vote to get rid of Jeff Kent. But then they were able to sort of get their footing in the game and really do this anti-Tandang alliance. And on paper, you could say that, like, yeah, they might be able to take advantage of that situation. But they were also, it's not like they started on those tribes and those were the only people that they interacted with. You know, like they are still OG Mindanao. That they have those relationships that they're able to mine. So I feel like it's that relationship, you know, from a numbers perspective or that situation from a numbers perspective, but it's less of that from an actual relationship building perspective, just mm-hmm. because they've had the time to like plant those roots with a bunch of people. And to that point, I think we talked about how PK in particular might be in trouble coming into a merge, which I wouldn't be able to say with either Malcolm or Denise. The Tandangs at that point were so excited to cannibalize one another that those two were just completely disregarded. And then once they sort of had their feet under them in the individual portion of the game, they were able to run it really, really far. I could see that with Tony. Not too sure about PK personally, though. I'd be happy to be wrong just because he is such an unstable element in the game and that makes it so much fun.
Yeah, and I would say that Tony's main relationship is still Verna, so it's just a bit different. It's just, yeah, that was, they were absorbed. There was no swap. This has been so many iterations of all the tribes that we have to keep coming up with new puns. It's very exhausting. So I just think that it's very different. And the tribe dynamics here that we're seeing are kind of unlike anything that we've seen before. I mean, it is voting blocks, but there's just been so many iterations and so many connections across different tribes that I think it's going to be just really interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. John Liu says, who had the best technique as a snake in the reward challenge and why was it not Katinka? And I do have to say that I was really happy to see that Tom was validated in what he had said. You know, he was vindicated in what he said earlier in the season in that not all snakes are legless. And we saw that in this episode.
Yeah, exactly. And Tom also by far the best snake in this challenge. And
that's
who
what
knows
he meant,
if Ace
probably.
Was in the game. If Ace was in the game, maybe Tom would have said automatically that Ace was the biggest snake in the challenge, even if he didn't do that part of the challenge. But yeah, him and Boosty went aggro. And I do wonder, though, to Jean's point, could it be a thing of like maybe less about the speed bumps and all? Maybe it's more about like upper body strength because you are just sort of like throwing yourself around there. Though Katinka, again, proving herself to be quite formidable in challenges, does this frontward flip. Look, Tony, I see where you're coming from, that, you know, maybe Katinka was able to get some momentum, because basically what happened from what I could see, and luckily we had the slow-mo to prove it, was it looks like she tried to like spring herself forward to get some extra distance, and then she just landed in a way where her feet got so much momentum that they swung over her head. But I would also, like, I'm totally fine with that, because you're putting your body at such personal risk to get ahead. Like, I wouldn't call it cheating. Like, if you want to pay the hospital bills that might come out of it, go ahead. It's like saying, like, oh, let's have a race to get down the stairs. And if you throw yourself down the stairs to get there, like, you totally deserve the win, you know?
It's so true. It's like, that's so unfair as that person's just, like, lying there in a full body cast. Like, you don't deserve this.
I mean, that's, what did you think of, especially in slow-mo? It looked a little nasty. Like, she, you know, basically rolled over her neck. I don't think she would have broken it, but it looked like a pretty tough situation, but she was she's a trooper, and maybe it was the adrenaline flowing. Maybe she had to get like a neck brace afterwards, but it looked that neck crunch just looked particularly nasty.
Yeah, so worth it though for that disgusting chocolate fountain. I maintain, not worth it at all. Not
well, no, they got the jelly beans. Was that a better reward?
No, that was like, that's barely a reward at all. It definitely wasn't worth it for that.
I don't know, John says she has a mouthful of sweet teeth, so maybe she would disagree with that. A part of me kind of wished it was a jar of Bernie Bot's every flavor beans, just to see how they would react to that, and whether or not they would be like shoveling down the booger beans because they're so hungry.
Jean had so many good confessionals in this episode. She is a treasure. I hope she's not the consensus merge boot. She's so good.
Yeah, completely agree. She's just such a fun character. And the other fun thing about her is maybe just because she sort of does have this, like, I wouldn't say it's like a James Miller-esque strategy, but this idea of like, she says all this stuff when the complete opposite is true. And unfortunately, by, you know, coincidence, she just is not really understanding of the true elements that are going on. But she's really damn good in the confessionals. Arguably, probably one of the maybe my favorite confessional giver.
No, that's a lot to say. There's been some good confessionalists in this season.
Well, especially some of the people that are left. I mean, Tevin was great with all the analogies he was making about his relationship to Martinez. But of the people who are remaining, I think everyone is good in the confessionals. But Jean just has a certain way of saying things and delivering things that
Shanae is
good
too. Shanae
specifically on Tom is very good.
But she just hasn't had an opportunity to talk about much else. But what she said about Tom has been, she narrates it very well.
Yeah, exactly.
Nick Fishman says, Josie was complaining a ton about Tony earlier in the episode, yet didn't seem to make any pitch to PK for the vote. Was this not shown, or did she not try?
It's a good question. I mean, maybe, I feel like Josie's relationship with Tony is tighter than PK, right? That's the reason why she brought Tony over from the second iteration of Luzon. So, I mean, she probably did make a pitch to PK, but like, if you have two people, one of whom you've spent a week in the game longer with than the other, who is going to be the easier person to make the pitch to?
Yeah, I do think that, you know, Tony becomes that swing vote pretty clearly. She's been with PK from the beginning. She's been with Josie on that swap tribe. And that's why I think it was such a bad move for PK, who could have been in that situation if it was Tevin and PK and Tony, and he would have been that swing vote. I just think that it's really tough when you're in such a small tribe, and it's like that triangle. And then for her to go to PK, who she doesn't know as well, and then she's risking PK going back to Tony and saying that she approached him. So I just think that that's really risky. You just have to go with the person that you trust the most, which she obviously had a lot more of that with Tony. I think that that was probably the right play for her instead of going to PK and just making it messier, because that might be the nail in the coffin where it's like PK has just come to you, but Josie's come to both of you. So you're just like, okay, well, she's not trustworthy, whereas PK was.
Yeah, and it's the exact same thing that happened to Tevin, right? Is that Tony earned ire against Tevin because PK came to her and said, hey, he's plotting against you. And yeah, like you said, it shows much more trust if you said, okay, you know, if you're applying to a job and you say, well, I'm only applying to you, makes a different statement than, yeah, I'm applying to a bunch of different jobs. So like, it doesn't really matter which one I go with, you know? So arguably, she could have made the argument. I had a thought this could have been a possible out, especially when we started seeing like the teacher Tony stuff, that maybe Josie could just make the last minute pitch to PK because he can be so emotionally swayed despite his consternation against it, that, hey, you know, Tony is someone who can run a little hot. I'm someone who runs cool. I might be the more loyal ally. But I think from a completely objective perspective and looking at the previous 20 plus days of the game, it was the right decision, even though it was the best decision she could make, even if it didn't end up being, you know, didn't end up paying off in success. Very little would have paid off with success with Josie here. It was a very, very much a corner position for someone who has lived their entire survivor life essentially in the corner.
Yeah, for sure. Last question. Jordan on Twitter says, seeing that Survivor SA has a habit of giving the audience a jury vote, do you think we will see a final two and a jury of eight with the audience being the ninth jury member? And to that, I was like, what? So I went and looked it up, and it's true. In seasons 3 and 4, the audience got a jury vote. Did you know this?
Yeah, but I had heard about that, but season 5, they had a final three, they had a jury of eight, but they also had the two captains vote.
Right.
So they might go with, they're not too bad about, you know, doing an even number jury with a final three, but something tells me they're going to go with a final three.
You don't think that they're going to do an audience vote, right?
I don't think they will, because if they didn't do it in this last iteration, maybe they won't again. But again, this is a revamped production company. I don't know if they want to take that hint from a previous, you know, Survivor South Africa franchise. I feel like that's one of the only Survivor franchises that does that. So it doesn't make sense to me, especially if they're like utilizing elements from the other international and U.S. versions of Survivor, that they would say, you know what, let's bring the audience vote on board. Yeah, that's never great. When you get into like the Russell Hance proposition territory, that's never a great way to design your game, in my opinion.
Yeah, let's not take any ideas from Russell Hance ever. Let's just have that be the way we go forward. But I don't know, for me, it just kind of puts me offside, because I think that the one way I would stop watching Survivor was if it came down to an audience vote, not a jury vote. And while this is just one vote, you know, we're like a ninth of the way there, and I just don't like it on principle. I do think, you know, it's a completely updated version. It's a few years later, new production team, super fans. So I just don't think we'd go in that direction. So I don't know if the first person from the merge might not be a juror. I don't know if they're going to do final two or final three. Basically, I don't know anything. So I don't even know why I'm speculating about this.
I mean, maybe it's just because we're coming right off of Survivor New Zealand, where they vocalize this. I'm personally going to go with final three, jury of seven. Though I'm totally fine being wrong about that.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. Again, I want to see a final two. Like, we don't get to see it enough. And it's interesting with these international versions. Like, I assume it's the old way of doing Final Tribal Council as well, which, again, the nostalgia person in me, I like that. So I'm excited to see that if that's the way it goes.
Yeah, well, though maybe we got a bit of a hint of it here, where we got to see, like, what a final two situation would have been like if it was PK and Tony and Josie in the final three. We should also mention that this is the official halfway point of Survivor South Africa, because I believe you received intel. People were wondering how long is the season going for. I believe we got confirmation 16 episodes, right?
Yeah, and that's why I do think it would be a final two, because just being a couple more episodes in the US, they would kind of need that extra time. Of course, that they did have the final that tribal council where people didn't get voted out, even though you should get voted out at every tribal council, according to Nico. But yeah, I just think having those extra episodes, it might have to go down to a final two, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they could do sort of what they did in Australian Survivor 2016 and do like maybe one episode where they have like two reward challenges or something, you know, one thing, or maybe a recap episode. Who knows? But yeah, for those of you that were wondering, it's 16 episodes. I can't remember. Did they give the day count? Are they still going for 39 days, or is it going for a little bit longer?
I personally thought it was 39 days, but I might just be assuming.
But feel free to correct us out there if we are incorrect. We are totally for that. Yeah, we are totally for that. But yeah, we're officially halfway through the season. I'm so glad we're going weekly, because even, again, like this episode, which had sort of like a more predictable boot, we've gotten a little over an hour and a half of discussion out of it, just because there's so much stuff. And it's not just because you and I love to talk shit.
It is because of
part
that,
of it, but, yeah, but it's because there are so many interesting dynamics going on, both strategically from a character perspective, that especially approaching a merge. Yes, there might be a chance that you get these sort of two sides line in the sand of original tribe lines with, you know, consensus boosts on each side. But there are so many things at play. There are so many different ways that people are playing as well, that I really do feel like anything can happen. And that just makes me so, so excited.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also on that note, that is actually all I have for this now hour and a half podcast about just one episode. How are we doing multiple episodes?
I don't know. I mean, we really like condensed things down to the Cliffs notes. And even then, those Cliffs notes were pretty darn long. But now we can at least take the time to like stretch our legs out and really get into the intricate elements of each episode, which is fun because, again, the storytelling is done so well that there are these little details that you can pick up on.
Yeah. What is the hashtag for this episode? You know what I want to go with, but I'll leave it to you.
I will acquiesce, especially since I know you like had sleepless nights over the hashtag last time. Let's go with Minda then.
Yes, and that I can spell. Do you want to spell it though, just in case?
All right. MINDATHEN. Minda then.
Oh, you did well. Can you spell your own name? No, we're not going to do this. We're already going too long.
Nope.
Mike, what have you got going on? Where can we find you on social media?
So you can always find me at a Mike Bloom type. The Big Brother 20 American season has begun, specifically from the preseason aspect. I got together with Liana Boris to do a special coverage on our flagship podcast, the RHAP BNB, covering the preseason content for that. That was ridiculous, but a lot of fun. So be sure to check that out on Reality TV Rehab Ups. We'll be doing intermittent coverage throughout, and also Westworld season 2 is coming to an end. I'll be doing some stuff on Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike, maybe some other stuff there in the meantime, in addition to all the other random odds and ends I do with Parade. I recently had an interview with one of the showrunners for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. which was great. I'll also be doing Big Brother 20 exit press there as well when the show starts up this week. So a lot of fun stuff going on over the course of the summer, Survivor South Africa included. I can't say enough, Shannon, how much I'm excited to go weekly with this, especially after this recent batch of episodes.
Yeah, now coming to Emerge, which we know it is through looking at that parchment. So this is why Verna needs to eat the parchment, so that fans can't like look through it on Twitter. The fact that they didn't show that it was going to be the Merge, but still left it there, makes me laugh, because they just underestimate us as a fandom that we're like going to zoom in and like flip it around and like see what the parchment says. But I'm really looking forward to next week. Personally, I spoke to Jericho last week on the Survivor New Zealand podcast. That was really fun. He's from Australian Survivor, the winner of Australian Survivor. So that was an honor for me. And this week I'll be speaking to Shannon Quinn about episode 10 of New Zealand Survivor. She's from the first season of Survivor New Zealand. So yeah, that'll be super fun as well. You can find me on Twitter or on Instagram at Shannon Gaitz. Let's see if I can get this. Shannon Gaitz. Yep, I think I got it. So you can, always happy to talk about the episode. You can find this podcast as well, the Reality TV Rehap-Ups feed, on the Survivor New Zealand Rehap-Ups feed, and leave us a review, leave us a comment. Always loving to talk to people about Survivor South Africa on the internet. It's been really fun.
Yeah, definitely. Especially as people are like catching up, hopefully. Let us know your thoughts about who's going into the Merge, who's looking good, who's looking not so good. I mean, this is such a fun community of people, and I like that we sort of have discovered, we've all sort of discovered Survivor South Africa together, I feel like. So especially that while people are catching up, feel free to let us know your thoughts. Again, when you're listening to this, you probably are caught up, but just always something to throw out there, you know. And definitely, I would say recommend Survivor South Africa to other people as well, because if you're, especially if you're Survivor starved and you're like looking for, you know, stuff to tide you over until Survivor Australia or Australian Survivor 2018, which just had a badass promo released a couple days ago, this is something nicely to, you know, tide you over. We got 8 weeks left, so we'll be finishing this up probably as, you know, Survivor, Australian Survivor properly gets started. It never ends. The globe keeps spinning on the globe-trotting franchise that is Survivor.
Yep, International Survivor is amazing. There is no off-season. This is everyone's life now, and I kind of love it.
yeah, specifically your life.
No, it definitely is my life, but I feel like we're all just, like, constantly watching, especially when Australian Survivor starts. It's like, there's absolutely no break, and that's the way I want it, so it's good. But thank you to everyone who got this far on the podcast. Hashtag MindaThen. Mike, thanks for being here as always. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, and we will see you guys next week. Bye.